All right, the Veterans and Military Affairs Subcommittee will be called to order. Chandra, will you please call the roll?
Chair Inouart.
Here.
Vice Chair Smith.
Here.
Representatives Beleka, Broxson.
Here.
Clark Reed.
Here.
Jones.
Here.
Murphy. Pigman.
Here.
Rangel.
Here.
Rauschein.
Here.
Santiago.
Here.
Stark.
Here.
And Zimmerman.
Here.
We have a
just walk in. Thank you. And members, by your presence, we have a quorum. And I'll ask everybody in the audience, please turn off your cell phones, beepers, pagers, noisemakers, CB radios, whatever you have. And if anybody would like to speak today, if you fill out an appearance card, we'll be glad to recognize you. Well, first order of business, I'd like to recognize my lovely wife sitting in the back. Today is our second anniversary, and I appreciate you being here, honey. Today's agenda includes a bill that we'll be hearing, plus we're going to have a presentation, since I understand that the presenters have a plane that they're catching at some point this afternoon, Representative Rangel's bill, we're going to hear that presentation. And so the staff from the Florida Defense Support Task Force, if you'd like to please come up and give the presentation to the committee. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rocky McPherson. I'm a retired Marine colonel. Spent a few years in state government in the Bush administration with our Veterans Department, and then for the last 7 years I've been with Enterprise Florida in their Military and Defense Department, and part of that is the Florida Defense Support Task Force, which the legislature created and has generously funded over the last 3 years. And, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the invitation for an update on BRAC, which was what Carrington asked me when we first talked. That initial request is good, but just for information to start, to get to a report on BRAC, what we really need to talk about a little bit first is the Defense Department budget, because that really is the driver. And so I've got a slide on that we'll start talking through this year's budget. But of note, before I jump into this year's budget, it's important to note that the President in 2012 requested a BRAC in 2013. The Congress did not allow that to happen. In the 2014 budget, there was a request for a BRAC 2015. Again, the Congress did not act. So now we're in a situation where the President's budget for 2015 has been delivered to the Congress, and in that there is a request for BRAC 2017. Now, the background of how some of this builds to get to that, we'll talk about it in a minute. But I think it's important to note some of the elements that are part of what some folks in D.C. are describing as an unusual budget year. In the Defense Department budget, you can see the number here, $495.6 billion is the base budget for the Department of Defense. It's down just a little bit from last year, not a tremendous deviation. What's new this year is there a thing called OGS, Opportunity Growth and Security Initiative, an additional $26.4 billion. But the way it is framed, it is an additive to the Department of Defense, and it requires new revenue. So when you put that condition on it, the likelihood of the U.S. House passing revenue enhancement opportunities to fund the things that are in that $26 billion is just very, 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 very shaky. On the other portion of the defense budget, a third part of it, is what's called Overseas Contingency Operations, OCO, $79.4 billion. As we all follow what's going on, this is the Department of Defense war budget, and it essentially is a placeholder for the amount that was used last year to sustain operations in Afghanistan. We all know that the U.S. and the Afghan government have not agreed on a residual force agreement for Afghanistan troop presence after the end of this December. So until that happens, this is a placeholder that DOD has put in. But everything I read on almost a daily basis, including some again today, is that that's getting very unlikely. So whether that will be a part of the budget or not, nobody really knows. But the three elements here add up to about $600 billion for the Defense Department budget, if all of it were to come to pass under the conditions that are there. Now, the other part that's important to note and really is a driver in some of the BRAC questions is sequestration is still with us. You may remember that about 3 years ago, the DOD budget was cut by almost $500 billion over 10 years, $50 billion a year. In addition to that, and after that had happened, sequestration was put into effect. And that's an additional $500 billion over 10 years. That money caused some terrific impacts on readiness in the Defense Department. So consequently, there was an agreement this last year for 2 years partial suspension of sequestration. But we need to remember that in 2016, it goes back to the full $50 billion of additional cuts every year for the next 8 years. So that's just another part of the problem. And then the last part of the problem is the continuing resolution in Washington. Continuing resolution is the method by which the Congress extends the budget authority for the current year to the next year because they are unable to pass a budget. That has been the process for the last 4 years running. There has not been a budget passed on time, which is supposed to be by the 1st of October, for quite a while. So all of this adds up to a three-part problem with a caveat on the end, and oh, by the way, the budget may not happen because it is an election year, and we all know that. So given that as background of the budget situation in DOD, and I'll be glad to take any questions on that if anybody would like, I'd like to move now in a little bit of history of BRAC. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair. Colonel, I was wondering, you talked about the cumulative effect of about $600 billion. How does that compare to previous years and the total cumulative dollars spent towards the defense industry?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, there are some anomalies in this. Remember, the $26 billion portion for OGS is additive new dollars that are proposed that were not there before. So right away you have that as a delta, because it was not in last year's budget. And then the other portion of it is whatever happens with sequestration, the Congress will adjust that. But the base budget of 495.6 is a small decrease from last year, 0.4%, if I remember the number right. So it's not a major, it's a continuing straight-line DOD budget at a lower level than before, and it has an added element of whatever goes into the war.
Recognized for follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. Colonel, one of the things I was wondering, during the peak of the war, the total package of dollars was much more. Do you have an example of the decline in overall defense spending?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to come back on that one. I don't have an answer right now for that, but I can get it for you.
Thank you. Representative Broxson, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you mentioned that they requested in this budget, BRAC 2017.
Yes, sir.
That has not been established. There's a possibility that would also be declined by Congress?
Recognized.
I'm going to go through the next slide on 17, and I will answer that question with the lead into it, if I may, sir.
All right. Okay, you can go ahead and continue with the presentation.
Thank you. Now, BRAC 2017, moving to that question of BRAC 2017, a little bit of history here. There have been five BRACs, and they started out as cost savings initiatives in the Department of Defense to get rid of unnecessary structure. Florida has been a part on the fringes of all of them, but 2 years particularly impacted Florida. First was 1993, and there were some major negative impacts, particularly in the Orlando area. The Orlando Naval Training Center was done away with, and there were some other things. So there was a significant negative impact in 1993 on Florida defense installations. In 2005, the last BRAC that we have, the situation was markedly different. There we had three major gains for Florida. We gained the F-35 program and its major training evolutions at Eglin Air Force Base. We gained the 7th Special Forces Group out of Fort Bragg moving to Eglin, and with that a multi-million dollar construction program to build a new cantonment for that Army Special Forces Group. And then we also gained the P-8 program. The P-8 is a new jet aircraft that will replace the Navy's P-3 submarine hunter. And they are all going to be at NAS Jacksonville. There are probably a few of them there now, and over the next few years, the entire program for the P-8 will be housed at NAS Jacksonville. So those three major gains in 2005 resulted in an additional 4,000-plus jobs, military jobs, plus families in the state of Florida. So 05 BRAC was very good to the state of Florida. And then now let's talk about this budget. Mr. Broxson, as you said, BRAC 17 has been requested. The congressional reaction in D.C. about the existing president's request for a BRAC in 2017 has been very, very negative. Both Senator Rubio, Senator Nelson are on record as being against it. Congressman Miller, Congressman Crenshaw, Congressman Rooney have all publicly stated that they're opposed to it. And I don't have a poll of the entire Florida delegation, but in general, there is not the reaction is negative. And then the other thing I want to touch on here is what else could happen about a BRAC. Within the last 2 weeks in front of Congress, the Secretary of Defense is on record as highlighting the fact, a very little-known fact, that there is additional authority to close or modify bases that is within the existing authority of the Secretary of Defense. But there's some caveats to it. The first one is that in order for the Secretary of Defense to act without a BRAC to realign or close a base, the President must declare to the Congress that that is in the interest of national security or a military emergency. If those conditions were to exist, the Secretary of Defense can, by his own authority, with notification of Congress, close or realign an installation. So that's a element that really most, it's always been in the law, in Title 10, that section, but it's never been used. And the odds are it probably won't be used, but it is a part of the process of the administration pushing to have a BRAC 2017 enacted by this Congress. So we don't have a BRAC 2017 now. The Congress has not acted on it. The reception of it is generally negative. But what is going on is continued cuts in the defense budget. And that's why I mentioned sequestration earlier. That is coming back in 2016, additional cuts to the Defense Department. So those budget cuts and sequestration do drive force structure changes, particularly ground force structure changes, because that's where the money is in the Army, weapon systems programs, aircraft, ships, and readiness for training for personnel who are in the current military currently. So all of these things will continue over time unless the Congress changes the sequestration law between now and 2016. Don't know. You know, I'm not going to forecast that one. Now, a little bit of talk I think is warranted about Florida and what Florida has done, and I would note here with the support, strong support of the legislature and the governor. When the Florida Defense Support Task Force was created, the very first thing was we looked around and we said, hey, we need a new analysis of all of our installations. And we contracted a group called the Spectrum Group out of Washington, D.C., to do a SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunity, and risks of all the bases in Florida. And that was conducted. We actually did it on an accelerated basis because, remember, we said there is a threat of BRAC 2013 at that time. So we contracted a team with the resources provided by the legislature and completed that. And we now have in hand an updated report, which, by the way, thanks to your efforts, is excluded from the Sunshine Law. There is an exemption for this task force when they talk strategy about our bases, and we use that. So we have a report about the status of our bases and where some opportunities may be. The second thing that we did is, having that report in hand, it became apparent that we need, and with some push from some members of the legislature, both the House and the Senate, that we needed some additional advocacy support in Washington, who are experts in this kind of ballgame, to assist on the Hill with what our congressmen are doing, but also to be inside the Pentagon and have an ear towards what's happening in the Pentagon as changes driven by declining defense budgets continue to occur, and they are going to continue to occur. So we have that team on board now. Matter of fact, we just renewed their contract for an additional 2 years. It now runs through the end of December 2015. So we have the Principi Group aboard to do that. Of note, the principal of the Principi Group is former VA Secretary Anthony Principi, who is also the chairman of BRAC 05. So there isn't a better expert, and he works for the state of Florida. Now, what are we going to do with that? Their tasks are to address the risks to our bases and look for opportunities. We have an analysis of our bases, and if we see a place where something could be done with a military construction budget or a community effort to help a base, then we push those. And the Defense Task Force meets almost every month. I think in a little over 2 years, we've had about 2.5 years, we've had 23 meetings, almost monthly. And we are working to maintain awareness of what the military service actions due to budget reductions are. The services are right now planning for how they're going to work with smaller budgets in the future. All of the services are doing it, and we see incremental announcements, sometimes program by program, generally not by base. But everybody is tracking force structure cuts. We are tracking numbers of allocated dollars for programs like buying aircraft or buying ships or anything like that that will impact it. And when we look at that, we look at what portion of that is coming to Florida. And then the final thing we're trying to do with the task force is continual interaction with the congressional delegation and the governor's, it's the Florida D.C. Federal Affairs Office. The Principi Group and the D.C. Office for Florida have an open and very, very cooperative relationship. Additionally, Congressman Miller was down here on the last break just a week ago and came to the last task force meeting. And Congressman Tom Rooney came and spent an hour getting an update on the task force and most of the things I'm trying to tell you now. So that's what's going on now. If there is no BRAC, then the DOD budget continues on a slope. Sequestration may come in, and that slope could get greater in the decline. And there are things that are going to happen that we have to know about and deal with. So in summary, first bullet is Congress is unlikely right now to authorize a BRAC 2017. Now, when I wrote this slide originally, I had the words very unlikely, and it didn't say right now. And I want to talk about that for a second, because that's a distinction that's important. The current membership of the Congress, and particularly the U.S. House, will probably not authorize a BRAC. They will not go along with it. But historically, in all five of the BRACs that we mentioned, every one of them has had the kind of negative reaction from the Congress initially when the proposal came out of the Defense Department and the President. Every one of them. Every one of them was enacted into law in a committee after two sides were working on compromises in a budget. So, in conference. So that's where the possibility of something being stuck in exists. In a conference committee, probably after the election, because there, most folks, I don't know anybody that's saying there will be any action between now and November. There will be specific things on specific programs here and there, but as far as action on a BRAC, the Congress probably will not undertake it until after the election. When the new composition of the House and Senate are known, and then there's an opportunity before the new Congress is sworn in for things to happen as they have on past BRACs. That's how they have happened in the past. So it won't happen right now, between now and the November. But sometime we have to be very, very alert right after the election, before the next Congress is sworn in January, because that's the most likely time for something to be enacted. And let's see. I already mentioned DOD budget are likely to continue. And then unless the Congress changes the sequestration law, those cuts come back up to their full strength in 2016. And for the reasons that I mentioned earlier in our summary of what your Defense Task Force has done, Florida really is very well ahead in awareness of what's going on and in preparedness for dealing with things that come down the road. There are all kinds of little small things. I'll just give you one or two examples. In Jacksonville, there is a fleet readiness center that repairs airplanes, tears them down to the frame and puts them back together as they get to a point in life where they need that. There are six of those in the United States. One of the things we had the task force look at and some of the experts in D.C. look at, what's the cost of labor in that facility versus the other five, and what's the cost of living in Jacksonville versus where the others are located? And quite frankly, the best deal for the Navy on a repair facility for jet aircraft is in Jacksonville, Florida. And we have made that clear to the Navy at the three-star level in Washington. So when they look at where they're going to place new work, they now have an awareness that they probably didn't have before of those factors and where a workforce that wants to be there. I mean, the Navy's most requested duty station is Jacksonville, Florida. So that's a good tale. There are some other things that have happened. You may recall a few years back, two or three years ago, F-15s left Tyndall Air Force Base. Now there is a new F-22 squadron coming in. That's through the efforts of the Bay Defense Alliance and the task force and the Principi Group in Washington. They'll all work that problem to highlight that Tyndall had some capability and there was a need to make some replacements, and that decision was made by the Air Force based on the merits of Tyndall being the best place to put it. So there are instances like that around the state where we're looking at every base and saying, where are the opportunities that we might, we won't go picking off somebody's, somebody else's, you know, another state's defense industry. But if we see an opportunity where we know something's going to move, we want to be able to make the case that if you're going to move it, it ought to move to Florida. And in the aviation world, that's a particularly good case because of the weather for flying and because of the ranges that we have around this state. So that, Mr. Chairman, is just a report on where we are on both the defense budget and BRAC right now. It's the most current information I have, and I'd be glad to take any questions.
Let me just make a couple comments, and I think the last bullet on that slide is very important. You know, being ahead of the curve. We don't know if there's going to be a BRAC 2017. It could be BRAC 2019. But just the fact that we're looking at our bases now and we're trying to anticipate what might be used as scoring to protect our bases that we have currently. Now, one thing you didn't address is actually the National Guard, and the Florida National Guard strength is, I think, the lowest by percentage compared to population. Yes. And I think it was the Secretary of the Army or Secretary of Defense is looking at maybe a 10% across the board to help with sequestration changes in the budget. I know the Adjutant General is certainly in, I think altogether, all 54 or so Adjutant Generals, including the territories, have combined and are against these reductions. What can we in Florida do to assist in pushing back against those reductions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, a little broader, I'm going to up it just a little bit. The main thing behind what's going on in the National Guard situation is the force structure issue driven by the budget, where things, and particularly in the Army, force structure is the biggest dollar player. So given that, there is an ongoing battle, and we saw this same battle last year in the Air Force between the regular Air Force, the Air Force, Air National Guard, and the Air Reserve. Right now, we're seeing the same thing in the Army materialize. There is an ongoing debate in Washington about what's the size of the regular Army going to be, what's the size of the Reserve Army going to be, and what's the size of the Army National Guard going to be. So that problem is out there, and the Army senior leadership are working their recommendations, which will go to the Congress. The National Guard, as we know now, there's some interesting factors to that. The National Guard now has a 4-star senior member who's a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. That didn't exist 4 years ago. So that's elevated stature for them to present their case. You are absolutely right, Mr. Chairman, about the fact that the National Guard in Florida on a number of soldiers per capita is just about the lowest in the nation. The other part of this is there have been some proposals that Congress ought to look at it and not do a meat cleaver slice cut across all of them, but rather it ought to be proportional, particularly for states that can't fill their National Guard quotas. Some of those ought to be made available for the cuts that are going to come. So part of the message is the cuts are going to come. What we are trying to do is maintain, and I will say very frankly, too, the TAG, General Titshaw, is right in the middle of this battle. He was in the middle of the Air Force battle last year, and he is right in the middle of the Army battle, too. So they are making the case of why Florida won because of where we stand in the relative strengths we just talked about, but also because we're a disaster-prone state, that we ought not be a state that takes the kind of cuts that are anticipated. These decisions, we maintain awareness of them through the TAG. We maintain awareness of them through Secretary Principi's group. We maintain awareness of them. And just for info, in the Principi group, they have an awful lot of retired admirals and generals that touch places in the Pentagon for us. One of those is the former 3-star in the National Guard. So we have access, and General Titshaw has access, to the Principi group expertise on the National Guard in Washington. Does that mean we're going to be able to influence? I think we can make the case for what ought to be the right thing to do, but I don't know that Congress is going to make that decision. It's probably a better way to put it.
And the force structure, my understanding, was actually developed after World War II, and the reductions back when the Florida's population wasn't nearly what it is. before the days of readily available air conditioning and mosquito control, our population was nearly as big as it is now.
Yes, sir, that's correct. And I think we had, if I was looking around, I thought we had a member of the National Guard here if they wanted to make any comments. And did you, Sergeant Major?
I thought you did all, sir.
Okay.
All right, we'll accept that. And you'll be willing to take some questions from the committee?
Yes, sir.
Representative Smith, please. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Does the Principe Group represent any other states?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, they do, but we have an agreement in our contract with them that before they undertake a contract with any other state, two things happen. First is they tell us what it is and that they have no conflict of interest. They're not going to take on a state that has a mission that is in competition with Florida, and our contract requires our agreement to their proposal to compete for other contracts. So that is how that's managed. They are very open about it. I always know if they're going to seek business with another state, and we talk about it ahead of time.
Representative Smith, follow-up.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Does the factors of the things we've done, like allowing troops to get into the parks and giving them education and benefits as far as going to college and things like that, does that play into that overall calculation of getting the support?
You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I think the things that the Florida legislature and the governor are doing to make Florida the most military-friendly and veterans-friendly state in the nation are cumulative over almost a decade, and they are a great set of benefits for both military service members and family members. But the real answer to your question is the Defense Department is going to make decisions on where they put missions based on the military value of the installation and whatever that mission is. So on the margins, yes, it's very helpful to have people want to be based and seek Florida as their duty station. But the fact of the matter is the primary factor should be the military value of the installations. Are they the best place to have it? And the missions, are they placed in the right place?
Colonel, you talked about the repairing of, you know, aviation and things like that. Is our move to benefit the defense contractors and subcontractors, is that potentially going to be something that you can bring to the federal level and say, listen, we are making it cheaper for the defense industry to contract with these, and subsequently, you know, Florida's once again the best?
Recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Smith, as you know, there is a bill pending in the legislature this year that would have an impact on defense contractors, and the intent there is to offer to primes who win a Defense Department contract, and the state doesn't influence that. That is strictly competition. But if a prime, a major prime, wins a defense contract, we want very much for them to have their subcontractors located in the state of Florida. So the bill, and I think you're a co-sponsor of that, is moving through the legislature this year that would, in fact, bring that capability to have a break for defense contractors to think about where's the most advantageous place to have their subcontractors be located. If you're an aircraft manufacturer and you have thousands of parts on what you're building, there is opportunity there for that work to be done in the best business case place, and we want that to be Florida.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members with questions? Thank you, Colonel McPherson. I appreciate the presentation. I think you did a very good job in somewhat shorter notice.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Hi, members. We're going to take up House Bill 677 by Representative Rangel relating to county municipal parks. If you want to go ahead and present, you can present from your chair or the podium at your discretion. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a strike call.
All right. Let's go ahead and have you present the strike call, and we'll present from that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. If you don't mind, I'll go over what the bill kind of context and then go into the strike call. Thank you.
That's fine.
Thank you, and congratulations on your anniversary.
Thank you.
The bill is requires the actual original bill required county and municipal parks to do a full or partial discount on the park entrance fee to military service members, veterans, certain family members of deceased service members, law enforcement officers, and firefighters. The bill sets a 25% discount for active duty service members and honorably discharged and non-disabled veterans. Also, the bill sets a full discount for a veteran with a service-connected disability and certain family members of deceased members and law enforcement officers and firefighters. Now, the amendment, what it does is it removes the preset discounts levels to allow each local government to determine what appropriate for their financial circumstances. Further, the amendment narrowly defines a park entrance fee as a fee charged to access county or municipal land. This definition excludes fees for amenities such as campgrounds, equipment rentals, and programs taking place within public lands. Again, this change helps alleviate any undue fiscal strain placed on the individual county or municipalities. The changes are geared towards avoiding the potential mandate issue of reducing local government authorities to raise revenue. There is an exemption from the constitutional mandate for any general law that has an insignificant impact, fiscal impact, and the amendment helps utilize this exemption by reducing the potential impact. And it also goes back, and thank you for working with me, Mr. Chair. It does not mandate the county or the city, so we changed the required to May, so that way it gives the local governments the opportunity to decide what is going to be best for them also, and that is the amendment.
All right, so we've heard the strike all amendment. Are there any questions from the committee on the strike all amendment? Seeing none. Is there anybody from the audience wishing to speak to the strike all amendment? Seeing none, are there any members that wish to debate the strike all amendment? Representative Rangel, you're recognized to close on the strike all amendment.
Thank you. I waive close.
All right. And without objection, let's show the strike all amendment as adopted. Members, we're back on the bill as amendment. Are there any questions on the bill? Seeing none, is there anybody from the audience wishing to speak to the bill as amended? Is there any members that want to debate the bill? Representative Rangel, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I appreciate all your support. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this opportunity. And sometimes I think we seem to forget some of our family members in the process. And what this bill will do is it'll allow the county and municipal parks to be able to allow for not only the military members, police and firefighters, to get a certain discount, but also the dependents themselves. And sometimes, especially for those who have lost loved ones through the military service or, you know, firefighters or police. So thank you very much.
And Chandra, I do want to say it's great to have you back in the committee, but if you could call the roll and on the vote, please.
Chair Renouart?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Representative Zbeleka?
Yes.
Broxson?
Yes.
Clark Reed?
Yes.
Jones?
Yes.
Murphy?
Yes.
Pigman?
Yes.
Rangel?
Yes.
Roshan?
Yes.
Santiago?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
And Zimmerman?
Yes.
It passes.
Members, by your vote, we're going to report House Bill 677 as favorable. All right, members, this is most likely going to be the last subcommittee meeting of this session. And I personally want to thank each one of you for your contributions to this committee, and certainly the amount of work that people put into the GI Bill that has passed now through both chambers. And I especially want to thank Vice Chair Jimmy Smith, who's my NCOIC, for running this through the committees and presenting it on the floor. And it's going to be in the hands of the governor shortly, and I certainly expect him to endorse that. I want to wish everybody well. And I encourage you to seek out your military installations that are in your district, get to know them, you know, see some of the impact that they're making in your area and on the people that you serve, you know, and look for ways that we can continue to protect these military assets, because they are a major economic driver for our state. And while we don't know, you know, what the future is going to hold as far as base realignment and closure meetings and stuff that can either help or hurt the state of Florida, but if we do the preparation that this task force is helping us with, you know, we can come out favorable. And that's at least what we can ask for if it even exists. So with that, are there any other comments for the members before we close our meetings? Seeing none, Representative Smith moves that we rise.
Of course, thank you.